set
Let
long
me put
enough.
this microphone
yeah,
somewhere where I can't drop it.
Okay, good morning, everybody.
Let's see.
Welcome. You're good? Okay. Welcome to CSIS. My name is Sarah Ladislaw. I am the Senior Vice President and Director of the Energy and National Security Program here. And we are very, very pleased to have with us this morning Pratima Rangarajan, who is the head of OGCI Climate Investment. We're going to talk a little bit about what that is. I've been trying to get Pratima to come here for the better part of the year that she's had this current job for a couple of different reasons. One of which is OGCI is a really interesting organization that I actually don't think a huge number of people know a lot about in Washington, but certainly the portions of what they're doing to contribute to the ways in which oil and gas companies try to address the issue of climate change are all things that we do talk a lot about in this town. And so we really wanted to be able to give OGCI and Pratima a platform to talk about what they're doing. And because Pratima is here on the occasion of the World Gas Conference, but they've also just had their first Investor Day yesterday. So we think the timing is really great to catch up and hear about what they're doing. So I'm going to start at the very beginning, a very good place to start, as we were just in Vienna together, so I'm inspired by the sound of music. Would you please tell us,
we focus on things, we do not focus on production, which is what renewables would be, just because for our 10 oil and gas majors, they do that for a living. You'll see that they invest also in renewables and alternate energy, so it's not something that actually needs the help of our investment fund. So maybe I'll talk a little bit about our fund. As with any investment fund, we have financial metrics, but we also have a significant metric in terms of impact. We will truly be successful only when we can show that our investments have lowered the greenhouse gas footprint of the energy and the industrial sectors. And when you think about those two sectors, right, 75% of anthropogenic man-made emissions are from those two sectors because they supply us humans with everything we need. There is nothing today, those chairs or the way you got here or the fact that I'm on a microphone doesn't come from the energy or industrial sector. This is what makes our world go round. So it's really they supply us with most of it, and therefore 75% of the greenhouse gases come from there. And when you think of that, it's primarily either methane or CO2. So our focus, of course, then becomes reduction of methane across the oil and gas value chain from production to use. And then the reduction of CO2 produced. And so there we focus on energy efficiency, transport efficiency. And then finally, carbon capture, utilization, storage. So when the CO2 is produced, let's take it and demonstrate impact. In our philosophy, one of the reasons we decided to do that is simply because once you open that funnel and innovators start seeing that you can actually make money, you can make a business out of this, this part, the early part of the funnel will open up very, very quickly. There's enough innovation capital, there's enough innovation brains to want to work, but it's been very hard to get things off the ground, to really get them implemented and get them out at scale. So that's what we're looking for.
One of the things that you and I have talked about before, which I think is an interesting facet of this challenge, is the fact that a lot of innovation dollars go into industries and spaces where new technologies are getting deployed into kind of, you know, greenfield space, right, where they can be a system of their own or have their own impact. Whether it's technology or those sorts of, you know, information technology, that side of the ledger. The challenge is a little bit different for what you're doing, which you're looking for technologies that will deploy into a system. How is that different when you have to think about the deployment challenge for those types of technologies, and what kind of benchmarks and metrics do you put on those technologies for them to succeed within a system that you're looking to deploy it into?
It's an interesting problem. And all of you who worked in energy or industrial sectors know that this problem is real, right? We have a vibrant energy and industrial sector. Systems are already in place. And a lot of them are not just software, they're hardware.
And when you think of a typical venture, the issues I think is you talked about in particular is if your mandate is to try and get some of these technologies into the market, you're somewhat constrained by the rules of the market and the public policy environment. Is that a debate that you get involved in, or you really just sort of stay apart from that and focus on the R&D side? How do you think about the public policy framework?
You know, in the energy industry, there is no such thing as staying out of policy, in a sense. So, but I don't think I would get involved with advocating any one particular policy. Mm-hmm. But what I would say, and I, you know, this is a very important message, is low carbon is low carbon. Picking and choosing between technologies is not a luxury we have anymore. The climate issue is now a crisis, and we should encourage all methods of going to a lower carbon. And I think I have a reasonable amount of credibility to say this, since I spent the last 10 years doing renewables. I love renewables. Let's have more. But 30 years ago, 80% of our energy needs was met by fossil fuels. Today, what's the number? 80%. And it's because demand has grown by 30%. Population is growing 1%. So that's geometric, exponential. So between now and 2040, we're going from 7.4 to 9 billion people on Earth. We're going to need it all. So we need to get to involved. It's really within our project constraints. Right now, we're looking for CCUS, carbon capture utilization and storage projects. We have the 45Q mm-hmm. that was recently passed by the government, the upgrade of 45Q. Damien's using that to look for projects all over the United States. Mm-hmm. And there, we will work with the policymakers and regulators in the states, within the regions, in order to make our projects commercially viable. Mm-hmm. Because then we can bring in co-investors and we could really kick this off. Mm-hmm. So we're doing the same in the UK with a CCUS project.
So when you take that sort of approach, I'm particularly interested in 45Q because it's getting a lot of attention here in the United yeah. States. Are you looking simply for opportunities where you can make investments that will use 45Q or another similar policy? I'm just pulling that out because that's the one you talked about, to deploy existing technologies that you've become acquainted with in the work that you're doing? Or do you look for it as an opportunity to maybe utilize it for a type of technology that hasn't seen as much play out there? So for example, yeah. you know, more efficient versions of EOR maybe isn't necessarily...
Or a cement company for utilization.
Or a cement company, right. I mean, how do you view opportunities like that? I mean, is it more, are you looking for scale or are you looking for sort of innovation and new uses?
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes. So it really depends on the maturity of the technology. So if it's a commercial project, we need to bring technologies to a certain level of maturity before we let them get into the commercial piece.
You know, when we invest money on sort of reducing methane, there is sort of a trade-off there. And so where do you kind of participate in debates like that? Whereas, yes, everybody has sort of agreed that methane is a problem, at least in the United States. I would say we had some other folks here talking about methane at a different event, and it was called quintessentially a U.S. problem as opposed to sort of a global issue, which I thought was interesting. It was certainly valued more in sort of the U.S. policy context. But where do you come down in issues like that? How do you use your approach to managing methane? Is it purely on the technological side, or you really sort of get involved in some of those debates about cost and approach and regulation and things like that?
I think we can't avoid those debates. Mm. A private company is responsible for returning to shareholders. That's really what their job is. On the one hand, they're supposed to return, and we're very short-term in expectations from these companies. On the longer term, we need them to work on the climate transition. And now we have for the various other non-carrot methods, the stick methods, to say, why aren't you doing that? So companies are caught basically in between. And if you don't have clear regulations that they can explain to their shareholders, we need to meet these regulations, or there are tax, or some value to the carbon that you can show as an offset, then you constantly have different shareholders wanting different things from these companies. And they are trying to walk that walk. Mm. Any statement they make about the cost, for example, in that case, of what it takes to mitigate, there are 10 shareholders.
Versus depth in OGCICI's work. The initiative as a whole has the four areas of focus you've talked mm-hmm. about. Lots of other tasty morsels that are out there. Do you see climate investments over time, and if so, how soon, focusing on other technology areas, storage, materials, or God knows what? Thank you.
We'll take this one over here as well, and then we'll take Amy. We'll do them three at a time just because people are shy. You don't ask questions first, and then you all want to ask them at the end.
Hi, Eric Walterstorff with Sovereignty First. We're a freelance diplomatic firm. My question is, I can't tell if this is a philanthropic effort, which is wonderful, or whether you're trying to establish a competitive impact fund. So if I'm an impact investor, what is the opportunity cost if I look for something similar to you or not?
Okay, and then we'll take one more, Amy. Yes.
First question, as most reporters do, why are there no U.S. oil and gas companies in the organization? And then second, can you tell us a little bit more about Venture Fund Day? I'm not sure if it was open to the media. But can you talk a little bit how that went? Do you anticipate doing more of those in CCUS and carbon neutral in the two? Thank you.
Okay, great. So we've got four good ones
for you. I hope
you're
taking notes.
I'm taking notes.
Commercialization directors in the back of the room, Damon Girard, that commercialization takes a lot of work to get impact. So we do want to have some level of focus. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your question.
And then your second one was on philanthropic versus return on investment.
Yeah. Is that Eric? Eric, thank you for the question. We're not a philanthropy. We're definitely impact investment. But you said, asked, what was the cost? What was the second part of the question?
Are you looking to get competitive? Try to sort of see a competitive impact investment space in energy. Do you have competition?
Oh, yeah, I see. We are definitely trying to seed an impact investment area. With, you know, and it has to be commercially viable. Our projects, if they're not commercially viable, they will not scale. And if we're not commercially driven, we won't get other investors into our space. So that's why we're not going to be philanthropic, for many reasons, but those are two of the good reasons. Are we competitive? The answer is not. We actually will collaborate with other investment funds. Last year, we announced collaborations strategic with Breakthrough Energy Ventures, that's the Bill Gates Fund, with Energy Impact Partners. But today, if you ask us, we brought in three or four strategic co-investors into our venture day yesterday. And there were probably 15 other co-investors. So we really aren't competing for the returns. As long as we all make returns, we'll have more funds of this ilk. Mm-hmm. Our idea venture day, my favorite topic. So it was our first venture day, and really was just a way for us to do several things. One was bring out the innovators from the woodwork that are working on methane detection, measurement, and mitigation. So if you have a pipeline in the middle of the U.S., remote, you might need a satellite, you might send a drone to figure out, you know, what's going on, or if it's a valve, you might want to replace it, all of the above. So it was actually went off better than our wildest dreams. So obviously we're not having wild enough dreams. But we announced it at CERAWeek in February, and we were unknown at that point. I mean, had you heard of us in February? Probably not. So it took a lot of work from our team, a real grassroots work, but also from NGOs like EDF, from the Cleantech Forum. There are just so many people who went looking for deals for us. It was fabulous. When we talk about competitive, it was truly collaborative. All our investment co-investors, partners, they all sent in their companies. And so we got 56 applications, which is pretty good. Out of that, we selected 10. but there were actually more than 10 really good applications. So we have a bunch more in our back pocket. As soon as we're finished with this 10, we're going to address the others. And 10 of them presented yesterday. We had in the room the presenter teams. We also had co-investors, all of those looking to put their money in things. We had strategics. We had the OGCR member companies looking to see what they could pilot and deploy. Everybody gets to vote. We get to make the decision. And we will announce it in September.
And can you talk about who the 10 companies were? Or not individually, but like what they were, what their technologies were.
Let's do that. And just we put a 20 million, when we announced it CERAWeek, we said we would put 20 million towards this day. So we're very hopeful. So when you think about, just let me talk about detection really quick first, because it's that's the first piece. For an operational business to understand what it's doing, what its problem is, they need to actually identify the problem first before they can fix it. And we do not have today standards and standardized equipment and things for measuring methane. So, and when oil and gas pipelines stretch over wild swaths of middle of nowhere, you really got to be able to get some global data. So we have satellite systems, we had drones, we had aircraft type of measurement, we had in the ground measurement, we had sensors. Even our dream is you'd have sensors you'd wear on your, you know, if you're working on a refinery, you'd wear a sensor. And then, so you have those type of companies with hardware, all of them have software, because ultimately what you measure is some kind of optical, signal, really. Or infrared signal. So we need to convert that into physical. So then we had data analytics companies as well who presented. And then on the other side, which is mitigation, you know, valves. New pipe systems with sealants, because it's actually apparently in the wells that you really lose most of the leaks. What else? We had a couple more. But it's around those type of
things. Okay.
Do you have any more venture days than the other topics that you're...
Absolutely. My team doesn't want to hear it because they do all the work. I stay out of the way. But yes, absolutely. I mean, we've got to crack this carbon capture utilization storage. That'll look different, though. Different set of problems we have to solve. And energy efficiency, one of my favorite topics.
So, and I just have to ask, because we had Undersecretary Paul DeBar here a couple weeks ago, and he talked about one thing DOE is doing, which is these X-Lab sort of prize days where they're looking at particular technologies and they're gathering people together to talk about different technologies and look for commercialization strategies. So very similar, actually.
Yeah.
And afterwards, we had a sort of a deluge of emails about people wanting to know how to get involved. So is this a thing for which you guys are open to solicitation from the outside, or do you have a different pipeline for getting ideas and project details and things like that out there?
We actually are one of the few people who use our websites.
Great.
No, I shouldn't say few people, but we really use our website. And our website actually has a place where you can put in any type of request, or if you actually have a company that you want to get invested in, that's a different, we have links.
Okay, great.
And they go directly to our team that sifts through them, and we look at it every week.
Yeah.
So absolutely, please reach out to us as well on any ideas, because as we're new, we have the luxury of being creative. We're a very small team. We're going to stay small and nimble. So a lot of what we do will be through collaboration.
Okay.
And we will scale through collaboration.
Okay, great. And so your next venture day is not planned yet, but you are planning more. Great, okay. We've come to the end of our time, but if there's any sort of one last burning question, we might have time for it. But I think, yes, sir, right there. Just because I usually like to get in one more round in case.
Yeah.
Hi, Jeff Erickson with the Global CCS Institute. Pratima, you've mentioned both investments in companies and in projects. Can you say a bit more about the balance of those two or what you're focused on?
Companies versus projects,
particularly with respect
though,
to carbon capture and storage.
Yeah. You know, I was asked this question literally on my first day on the job. I actually think it's the opportunity that presents itself. We will hit whichever it is the right thing to address for that problem. So in CCS, particularly, we are looking for, in the venture side, we're looking for any technologies that will lower capture costs or efficiencies, because it really is, the cost is too high today for scaling. We will also look, I mean, there's some interesting new technologies on the, and those, just to be clear, on the capture side, we will look for industrial capture as well as for power. Because as many of you know, the concentration of CO2 is very different, and so you can have different types of technologies. So we do both, agnostic. On the gas power plant side, we are looking for better efficiencies. Right? The less CO2 we produce, the better. And there's some new, interesting new systems that are coming together, so we'll keep looking at them. So those are two. But we also believe on CCUS, we have to show the project. We have to show that the projects can work and that we have to take industrial along with power for the ride. We cannot do one, then the other. We don't have the luxury of time. Mm-hmm. So I'll introduce you to Damien in the back. He is, his job is to work on this. And we actually really, what we'd like to see in the UK, that's what we're working on, is projects with power and clusters of industrials. So we can really put in also utilization companies into those clusters so that the CO2 is available to them at a reasonable cost. And when we think about cement or concrete, cement is an emitter. You could put it in as the emitter in the cluster, or you could put in your new technology and make it a less severe emitter. So there are so many ways we can treat this problem. It really depends on what's available. I'm nowhere near spending my budget for the year. So give me more is the answer, I think.
That's great. Well, Pratima, I just want to say thank you for coming. This is another session that we've been long wanting to do as part of our Climate Change in the National and Corporate Interest series. Your name, the name of your organization has come up numerous times with other folks that we've had as speaking as part of the series. And we hope you'll come back again to update us maybe on your next venture day. But thank you very much for joining us.
Will do. And thank you so much for inviting me.
Thanks. Please join me. Thank you.